Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet one person at a time. So today we have Linda Graham. So excited to speak with her. She's an experienced psychotherapist who's really studied and written a few books on this concept of resiliency and resilience. So we all know what it's like when we've been knocked off our center, when we lose our balance, when horrible things happen, and they can be anything from little things to really quite big crises. And we need to pull on this concept of resilience. We need to actually be resilient so we can recover from that. And this is what Linda has become an expert in. So she's blended modern neuroscience, mindfulness practices, and relational psychology in her teachings, her trainings, and her book, Resilience, is what we're going to talk about today. So welcome, Linda.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa. It's really great to be talking with you.
Thank you. You too. And I really am so excited about your book, because I told you, I was telling you, you know, before we started recording today, that I work too, seeing people and really find myself, you know, in that position of hearing people's stories. And it's even though I've been seeing clients for 25 years now, it never ceases to amaze me what people go through. I heard a story this week where I was like, oh my God, it's like now that story is now in my top five of horrible things that happen to people. And I'm just sometimes in awe of the strength of the human spirit to survive. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? What we go through. And you were saying how, you know, you're from California, and that whole part has been impacted from the wildfires, and, you know, that's just been this devastating event to your state. And it's probably really calling people to be resilient.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, now the research scientists have identified three factors that help determine or predict whether someone will be resilient. And one is the severity of the external stressors. So those wildfires were very severe in their impact. But it's also the strength of our external resources. So do we have people, family, friends to call on, our financial resources, our medical resources. But the third factor is our own internal strengths of resilience, and that's traditionally thought of as grit, determination, hardiness, the will to endure and survive. But it's also capacities to be flexible, to be able to take risks, to see things from a new perspective. And that's what I focus on in the book Resilience, because it's the neuroscience, the modern brain science, that's teaching us how we can create more flexibility in our responses, even responses that we've learned from long ago. So that's what I'm focusing on. One of my colleagues, Frankie Perez, says how you respond to the issue is the issue.
Wow. Well, it was so encouraging to me that you have this concept of that resilience can be learned. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't come from an environment where you are taught resilience by your parents or had that model to you, it's something that we can increase our capacity for resilience if we try.
Mm-hmm. And that's because the brain has neuroplasticity. The brain learns and grows and changes its structure lifelong. And when we learn how to harness that, and so the exercises, the tools that I offer in resilience are all directed toward using that neuroplasticity to strengthen our baseline equilibrium, to strengthen our capacities, to manage our emotions, our fear responses, to be able to relate to ourselves with more trust and kindness and openness, less criticism, less shaming, and to be able to use our conscious reflection, our capacities to be aware and discern what's happening, discern how we're reacting to what's happening, so that we can see what our options are and make some wise choices. So what I try to teach people through these exercises is not only can they learn tools to be more resilient, but they're learning that they can learn. They're learning that they can recover their resilience.
Mm. And how do we do that? Can you talk a little bit more about the brain the brain stuff, because I'm really fascinated. My experience is more through psychotherapy and sort of, you know, the psychological model of trauma and trauma recovery. And so I'm very interested in the information you had in your book. And I loved how you're sort of, you know, talking about how the frontal cortex is there to manage, you know, mm-hmm. the sort of the amygdala and the brainstem and these parts of our brains that are so fear-driven. And I was also really interested in the fact that you said that by nature, our brain, especially those parts of the brain, are really conditioned to see things negatively.
Mm-hmm. So we've got several different ideas going here. One is, yes, from evolution, we have a built-in negativity bias, and that's so we survive. We will pay more attention to things that are dangerous or unpleasant than we pay attention to things that are safe or pleasant. And that's in every human brain. We're never not going to have that. So we strengthen the prefrontal cortex that you mentioned, which is the center of executive functioning. It's what we use to make decisions and plan and analyze, make judgments. But it's also the structure that we use to manage our nervous system, to manage our emotions, to attune to ourselves and know what we're experiencing. And it's the structure we use for response flexibility. So I call it the CEO of resilience. You're also talking about how the brain can do this kind of learning. And so we know that any experience at all, causes neurons in the brain to fire. If you repeat the experience, you'll repeat the neural firing. If you repeat the experience enough times over time, you will strengthen the neural circuitry where these neurons are communicating with each other, and you'll create new pathways. You can create new habits, new patterns of response. So I teach people practices of new conditioning, new experiences, new patterns, new neural circuitry. So you practice your mindfulness, your gratitude, your kindness, your compassion. But then there's also reconditioning, which is where we're wanting to rewire the old patterns we already have that don't work so well anymore. And that's by juxtaposing that negative pattern with something more positive, more powerful. And that juxtaposition causes the neurons to fall apart and rewire. So when the positive is stronger, you're actually rewiring the old circuitry. And then there's a third way, which I call deconditioning, which is simply, rather than focusing the attention of the brain on a task, as I've just been talking about, you sort of let go of that kind of focus. And we experience that with a daydream, with a reverie. We use our imagination. We use our intuition. There are other ways that the brain has of connecting the dots and making the links and the associations that come up with new wisdom, new possibilities. So those three processes of brain change, new conditioning, reconditioning, deconditioning, is what allows us to respond to an event that's barely a wobble, you know, you lose your car keys and then you find them, to the very serious struggles and heartaches that probably you and I are familiar with talking with our clients, to the trauma of too much, when too many things have accumulated in too quick of a time and we can feel overwhelmed. So these tools are meant to strengthen resilience at any level of disruption at all. And that's part of the encouragement of the book, that we can do that.
Yeah, your book was so hopeful. I felt like, oh my God, there's hope. You know, there's hope for us to retrain our brains. So, can you give an example of, like, I know you talked about sort of the hand on heart exercise, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And which one of those three that you described is that an example of?
So the hand on the heart for most people is going to be new conditioning. That's a practice that they haven't done before, though intuitively our bodies often go that way. But the reconditioning part is when you put your hand on your heart, you breathe gently and slowly and deeply. You breathe in a sense of ease and trust and goodness. That's all the new conditioning. But the reconditioning part is remembering a moment of feeling safe and loved and cherished with another human being or with a pet. And when you can evoke that feeling strong enough, you actually get the felt sense of it in your body of feeling safe. You're activating the release of oxytocin, which is the brain's hormone of safety and trust, but it's also the brain's immediate antidote to the stress hormone cortisol. So you're reconditioning your stress response by having a positive response that feels safe and trusting. And you can do that exercise, repeating it many times, enough so that it can actually preempt the stress response from arising in the body in the first place. So that's why it's one of the first things that I teach people, because we actually can change our physiology, we can change our stress response, and come into a sense of safety and trust instead. So that's reconditioning our old patterns.
Yeah, it was so, it's so cool. I tried it when I was reading your book. I'm like, I tried it, and it was so immediate, like, mm-hmm. you know, feeling like that body sense of calm. And I could tell that it was starting in my brain, you know, like my brain was kind of evoking the experience, but I could really feel it sort of settle into my body and my belly and my breathing. And it was really lovely.
Mm-hmm. And many of these exercises, it's a small practice. It would take you 1 minute to do that exercise. But when you repeat them over time, you're actually nudging your brain to go in a good direction. And it can become a new automatic habit that we don't even have to think about or remember to do anymore. It just automatically starts to happen.
So probably practicing these exercises would sort of change your baseline level of resiliency.
Exactly, exactly. And actually, I'm trying to help people recover their baseline. We have a natural physiological equilibrium in the body, and we can rev up too much. We can go into anxiety and fear. We can shut down too much and go into withdrawal and numbing out and collapsing and depression. But when we're in that baseline range of resilience, that's when we can meet and deal and face whatever we have to face. We have an emotional equilibrium too, that we're using that prefrontal cortex to manage the negative emotions and cultivate the positive emotions so that we have a sense of well-being and contentment. So all of these exercises are bringing us back to our natural awareness, for instance, our natural sense of presence and being in the moment. And we cultivate these tools to make it easier. We're teaching the brain how to get there a little bit faster.
And there's a lot of exercises in this book.
Mm-hmm. There are 130.
That's awesome. So how do people know which one is for them, or which ones do you feel like you use the most?
Well, it certainly depends on what's going on. I would encourage people, I present the exercises in an order. Each chapter has somatic intelligence, which is our body-based exercises, emotional intelligence, so we can manage the feelings that come up, relational intelligence within, so we're relating to ourselves in a healthy, optimistic way, relational intelligence with others, so that we have the trust we need to call on people to be refuges and resources for us when we're in trouble. And then the reflective intelligence, which is more bringing our mindfulness to bear, being very aware of what's happening and how we're reacting to what's happening, so that we can begin to think of what else to do. So I present them in that order because that's how the brain learns them. And so that's one way, but I suggest people experiment and find out what works for them at a particular time or given a particular situation.
That's really, that's great. And I like how you broke it down into sort of those five things. And when you, when I was reading that, I was like, oh yeah, I recognize those things, you know, in myself and my clients, but I never framed it that way for myself. So I found that very interesting how did you come up with that? Did you invent that yourself, or where did that come from?
Mostly after I wrote the first book, Bouncing Back, and I began teaching a lot of workshops nationally and internationally, I was paying attention to what helps people the most and putting it in that order. So it was really coming from teaching on the national workshop circuit for about the last 5 or 6 years. And then when I came to write Resilience, it just flowed based on the experience I was having with people learning about resilience. I do try to provide a map for people. So there's this trajectory of somatic, emotional, relational, reflective. We have the different levels of barely a wobble, serious struggles, too much trauma. There's the new conditioning, reconditioning, deconditioning. So within that matrix, people are going to find something that speaks to them in the current situation, in the moment. They just have to try and see if it works for them.
Yeah, I was really noticing for myself that I'm quite resilient on the emotional stuff. Like I, you know, like I'm friendly with myself. I talk to my inner child. I'm like supportive for myself that way emotionally. But I feel like neurologically, like somatically is where I struggle. You know, so I feel like I can calm my emotional self down, but I feel like my nervous system is still kind of jacked up.
So that's why I'm trying to encourage to pay attention. I encourage people to pay attention to what particular tools are going to work best for them, because maybe we learned some tools along the way and other tools we didn't. No shame, blame, but we can learn them now.
Yeah.
And so that's what I hope is useful for people, to see how this fits them, their particular history and conditioning, and what they're wanting to learn to do now.
Is there, can you like walk us through your hand and heart or one of the exercises that you do so we can get a sense of what they're like?
So I can do the hand on the heart, and then I'll also say a couple other things. So the hand on the heart is simply when there's a moment of startle or upset or distress, to put your own hand on your own heart center so you feel the warm touch of your hand. And then is to breathe more slowly, deeply, gently into the heart center. And then breathe in a sense of ease and goodness and safety and peace. But then to take a moment to remember a moment when you felt safe and loved and cherished with another human being. So not the whole relationship, just one moment. And that could be with a partner or a child or a friend or a therapist, a spiritual figure. And it could be with a pet, because pets actually work very well. And you remember this moment and you feel your way into that moment so that you get the felt sense in your body of what that feels like. And you spend 10 or 20 or 30 seconds there just savoring that feeling. And what's happening in the nervous system is when we breathe more slowly and gently, we're activating the parasympathetic branch of the nervous system, so it calms us down. When we're breathing a sense of ease and goodness and safety into the heart center, we're actually restoring the coherent heart rate variability of the heart that allows the heart to respond more flexibly to stress. But when you're remembering that moment of feeling safe and loved and cherished, that's when you're activating the oxytocin. And you can touch your hand to your heart center. There are neurons in the heart center, so it's a direct communication with the brain. But you can also do this by putting your hand on your cheek or giving yourself a little hug. Any warm, safe touch on the body can be helpful here. But when you activate the oxytocin, then that's the hormone of safety and trust, bonding and belonging, calm and connect. And so, of course, we can activate the oxytocin by being with a real person in real time that we feel safe with, but we can also activate it by remembering those moments when we felt safe or imagining them. So as I said, well, I didn't say, but I will say, this tool is powerful enough to calm down a panic attack in less than a minute. And when we practice it repeatedly, it can preempt the stress response from even arising in the body in the first place. So that's one of the first things I teach. And I'm going to tag on there because it's so simple. Because we use breath to regulate the nervous system, if people have permission to let themselves have a deep sigh, you just breathe in fully and then, and let the breath all the way out. That also resets the nervous system. And so if there's a moment of tension or frustration, you know that you're feeling tense and you pair that with the sigh. You breathe in and then, and that's the reconditioning. You're changing the physiology in your body. So these tools also give us a sense of empowerment, a sense of competence, a sense of mastery, because we're learning tools that will help us meet any level of difficulty that we face as we go throughout the week or the year. And so that sense of empowerment, I think, is part of being resilient, you know, shifting from a, oh, poor me, these bad things always happen to me, to a more empowered, agentic, but I can make some choices here. Right, bad stuff happens, but I can choose how I want to respond to that. And so I love the quote from Louisa May Alcott. I'm no longer afraid of storms, for I'm learning how to sail my ship. That's the idea. The storms never stop really fully, completely in a lifetime, but we can learn how to sail our ship. And when we trust ourselves sailing our ship, then we don't have to be so afraid.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I was doing it when you were saying it. It was so good. I could really feel, you know, that connection to the heart and I could feel my nervous system calming down, everything that we were saying. It's so simple, but it's so powerful.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And many of these tools are simple and powerful. That's what I think is helpful and practical about these tools. They can be simple and they're powerful.
I love it that you say that flexibility is kind of the core of mm-hmm. resilience. I've never thought of it that way. Can you explain more?
I don't know if I can say this on the radio, but one of the things I say in the book, it's one of the mantras of the book, is shit happens, but shift happens too. And when something bad is happening and we can look at our response to it and then shift our response to it, that's when we're bringing our resilience into play. We're not operating out of our negativity bias, out of our automatic survival responses, out of patterns that we learned from our family or from our culture. We're able to shift our response, and that's when we can be resilient. And when we do that, then the prefrontal cortex is really online looking for what our options are and what the consequences of those options might be so that we can make the wise choices. So it really does hinge on being able to shift what doesn't work into what does work.
Right. And that, I would imagine that's coming out of fight or flight. You know, mm-hmm. when you're in fight or flight, you can't think, you're just reactive. And if you're not in fight or flight like that, that breathe the hand on heart exercise would probably take you out of fight or flight. And then you can think, okay, this is what's happening, and what can I do about it?
Exactly. So I often will also teach, it's paired with hand on the heart, but I'll teach a mindful self-compassion break because it's one of the most powerful tools we have to manage our negativity. And that is when you notice that you're in distress, hand on the heart, the deep breathing, and recognize, ouch, this hurts. This is not pleasant. This is painful. And just a moment of recognizing this is a difficult moment, but also then having compassion for yourself as the experiencer of that moment. May I be kind to myself? May I accept this moment exactly as it is? May I accept myself exactly as I am in this moment? In other words, no criticism, no jumping all over ourselves. May I be kind to myself? May I accept myself exactly as I am in this moment? And then you can say, may I give myself all the compassion and courageous action that I need? All you're doing there is shifting out of the negativity bias, out of the automatic survival responses, into a space in the brain that can be more flexible, more receptive, more optimistic, and the direct measurable cause and effect outcome of a practice like that is resilience.
I love it. I'm going to read all these exercises and learn how to do them and bring them to my clients too. And I'm wondering how people can find your book, how people can take part in your trainings.
Mm-hmm. So my website actually has a lot of these resources. So Linda Graham M as in Mary, F as in Frank, T as in Tom.net. So Linda Graham MFT.net. And on the website are audio recordings of many of the exercises in the book. There are interviews, video interviews that I've had with other experts on resilience. All the blogs that I post every week on resources for recovering resilience are archived there. It's all free and easily downloadable. There's a link there for buying the book. So there's a lot that's available to people. They just have to start perusing and surfing it a little bit.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing your gifts with us today. And thank you for sharing your gifts with the world, because I just think this is so, I don't know if it's true that the world is getting crazier out there, but it sure is a time, you know, in my life and in my client's life where we really need this resilience. So I appreciate that you brought your work into the world.
Thank you. So Helen Keller said, all the world is full of suffering. It is also full of overcoming. And so we head in the resilient direction.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Linda, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Lisa. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
And thank all of you guys for joining us today here on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time, right here on Empower Radio.